All right, strap yourselves in because we're diving into one of the, most unsettling stories in the Bible.
Oh, yeah, this one's a doozy.
It's the what we call the Benjaminite outrage from the book of Judges, chapters 19 through 21.
Buckle up.
Yeah. And to help us unpack all this, we're turning to Dr. David Howard's lecture on this section.
Great source.
It really is. Fair warning, though, this deep dive, it takes us through some seriously dark events.
It's rough.
Yeah. Like, events that plunged the Israelites into a brutal civil war.
Definitely a low point in their history.
So, big picture, Judges is kind of this downward spiral for the Israelites, right? After they conquer Canaan.
It is. And a big reason for all the chaos is that they didn't have a strong, unifying leader.
You know, like the book is saying, look, this is what happens when everyone just does whatever they want.
Right.
Which brings us to that famous line. In those days, there was no king in Israel, and everyone did what was right in his own eyes.
Yep.
And this story takes that to a whole new level of messed up.
Yep.
So we're introduced to a Levite.
Okay.
Not the same one from chapter 17, though.
Right. Different Levite.
This one takes a concubine from Bethlehem.
Interesting.
And already I'm getting a bad feeling about all this. Can you maybe give us some context on this whole concubine thing?
Mm-hmm.
Because to modern ears, that just sounds, I don't know, a little off.
Yeah, definitely raises some eyebrows today.
Right.
But back then, concubine was actually a specific legal and social position in ancient Near Eastern societies.
Okay.
It wasn't quite the same as a wife, but she wasn't just like a casual partner either.
I see.
It's more like a wife with fewer rights and protections, which sadly says a lot about the power dynamics back then.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And this power imbalance ends up shaping the whole tragic story.
Gotcha. Okay, so this concubine, for reasons we can only guess at, ends up leaving the Levite.
Okay.
Goes back to her father's house.
Hmm.
But then the Levite decides, hey, I'm going to get her back.
All right.
Sounds almost romantic, right?
Yeah.
But her father keeps delaying their departure.
Oh.
Almost like he knows something bad's going to happen.
Yeah, you pick up on that too.
Yeah, it's a foreshadowing, right?
Big time.
Yeah.
The father's all about hospitality, which seems harmless, you know?
Right.
But it adds this layer of tension.
Yeah.
Like the calm before the storm.
Exactly. And then things get really interesting.
Okay, I'm listening.
They're getting close to Jerusalem, but the Levite refuses to stay there.
Why?
He actually calls it a city of foreigners.
A city of foreigners.
Jerusalem. A foreign city.
To the Israelites.
What's going on there?
Yeah, that's a crucial detail. Most people miss that.
I know, right?
We got to remember, this is way before King David makes Jerusalem his capital.
Right.
Back then, it was still Jebus, a Jebusite stronghold.
Mm.
It was this contested city right on the border of Judah and Benjamin.
Okay.
Not the unified capital we think of today.
Gotcha.
So the Levite skipping Jerusalem, it's not just about travel. It's a statement about how fractured Israel was at that time.
Wow, that's a great point. Okay, so they end up in Gibeah, which is Benjamin territory.
Uh-oh.
And this is where things take that dark turn I mentioned.
Okay.
It's nighttime. They're waiting in the town square.
Mm-hmm.
And this group shows up. The text calls them worthless fellows.
Oh, worthless fellows. That's never good in Judges.
Right. And these guys demand that the old man hosting them bring out the Levite.
Oh, really?
So they can know him.
Ooh, that's not good.
Red flags everywhere, right?
Yeah, huge red flags.
But this know thing, it's pretty ambiguous, isn't it?
Yeah. The meaning of know here is super debated.
Right.
Traditionally, it's been interpreted as a demand for a homosexual rape.
Which would fit with the Sodom and Gomorrah story.
Exactly. But some scholars argue it could also just be a twisted demand for hospitality.
Hmm. Like a really aggressive, messed up kind of hospitality.
Right. Either way, the text makes it clear that their intentions are hostile.
It's unsettling no matter how you interpret it. But honestly, what shocked me more was the homeowner's reaction.
Really?
Instead of protecting his guest, he offers up his own daughter.
No way.
And the Levite's concubine to the mob.
Whoa. Talk about a complete violation of hospitality.
Right. It's like the opposite of what you're supposed to do.
Totally. But remember, ancient societies were deeply patriarchal.
Yeah.
Women were often seen as property.
Right.
Their well-being was secondary to men's.
It's hard to wrap your head around that sometimes.
It is. It's a stark reminder of how much thankfully, our moral compass has shifted over time.
Yeah, for sure. So the Levite, to save himself, pushes his concubine out the door.
Oh, my God.
To this mob. And, they abuse her all night.
That's awful.
By morning, she's dead.
Oh, that's just heartbreaking.
And the Levite's response,
He throws her body on a donkey and goes home.
Are you serious?
I mean, can we even understand this level of callousness?
It's hard to stomach, that's for sure. But I think it shows us a lot about the Levite.
About his character.
Or lack thereof, yeah.
Right.
He goes to great lengths to get his concubine back, but when things get tough, he sacrifices her to save himself.
Yeah. And then he does something even more disturbing.
What's that?
He cuts her body into 12 pieces.
Why?
And sends them to the 12 tribes of Israel.
Oh, wow. This isn't just a personal tragedy anymore.
No, he's turning it into a national incident.
He's escalating things. Big time.
Taking this horrible personal event and making it a national outrage?
Yeah.
He's basically calling for a civil war. And you know what? It works.
Oh, no.
The focus shifts from external threats to this internal conflict, all fueled by the Levite's manipulation and, well, his desire for revenge.
So it's not just a small-scale thing.
No, we're talking 400,000 Israelite soldiers against 26,000 Benjaminites.
That's a huge conflict.
This is full-blown civil war, all sparked by one man's actions.
And there's that detail about Phinehas.
Wait, Phinehas,
yeah,
officiating at Bethel. Where the Ark of the Covenant was. Mm-hmm. Wait, the grandson of Aaron, the high priest.
The one and only.
The one who lived centuries earlier.
Yep.
That doesn't add up.
It does raise questions about the timeline of events in Judges.
Right.
Some scholars think these chapters might have actually happened earlier than their placement in the book suggests.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
But regardless of when it happened, the fact that Phinehas is there.
Yeah.
It connects this story to earlier instances of zeal and judgment.
Okay.
In Israel's history.
I can see that.
It suggests that this tendency to react violently to perceived outrages, well, it's not new. It's a pattern.
So to recap, we've got this power imbalance, a horrific crime, a manipulative act of revenge, and a full-blown civil war about to erupt.
It's a lot to unpack.
I know. Where do we even go from here?
Well, that's where the real tragedy unfolds.
Oh, boy.
We'll have to save that for the next part of our deep dive.
So last we left off, the Israelites were about ready to go to war with the Benjaminites.
Yeah, things escalated quickly.
I know. It started with this awful personal tragedy, but now it's a national crisis.
And a lot of bloodshed about to happen.
It's crazy how one man's actions could lead to all this.
Yeah, the ripple effect is huge.
So what happened next?
Well, the Israelites, they're convinced they're doing the right thing, right? Avenging this crime.
Okay.
So they launch their attack. But here's the twist. They get absolutely crushed.
What?
In the first two battles. Lose tens of thousands of men.
Whoa. It's like they forgot they're fighting their own people, not some foreign enemy.
Yeah, the grief and anger, it can be blinding.
You'd think God would be on their side, though, right? Given the circumstances.
Well, that's where things get even more complex.
How so?
They actually ask God, you know.
Ask him what?
Should we keep fighting?
And
God, even though their motives are questionable, he tells them to go ahead.
Wow. So they eventually beat the Benjaminites.
They do, but at a horrific cost.
Like what?
Almost the entire tribe is wiped out.
So they win, but it's a, what do they call it, a Pyrrhic victory.
Exactly. They punish the Benjaminites, but at the cost of their own humanity. It's like they become the very evil they were supposed to be fighting.
That's a chilling thought. They were supposed to be delivering God's justice, not becoming like the Canaanites.
Right. And the text makes that connection very clear.
Really?
It draws parallels between what the Benjaminites did and the sins of the Canaanites.
The ones the Israelites were commanded to conquer.
Exactly. The violence, the immorality, the total disregard for human life, it's all there.
It's scary how easy it is to fall into the same traps, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Especially when you think you're on the right side.
Self-righteousness is a dangerous thing. So what happens after this massacre?
Hmm.
Do they just go back to normal?
Like nothing happened.
Well, not quite. The Israelites realize, hey, we kind of went overboard.
They wiped out an entire tribe.
Almost, yeah. And now they have a problem.
Okay, I have to admit, I'm curious. How are they going to get out of this one?
Their solution, let's just say it's as desperate as it is disturbing.
Oh, boy.
They attack Jabesh-Gilead.
Jabesh-Gilead? Why?
They had refused to join the fight against Benjamin.
Oh, right.
They kill every man and boy.
Oh, come on.
And take all the virgin women to be wives for the remaining Benjaminites.
Hold on. They're trying to solve one atrocity with another one?
That's the twisted logic of a society that's lost its way.
Yeah, that's an understatement.
And wait, it gets weirder.
Weirder? How?
They still don't have enough wives.
For all the Benjaminites.
Yep. So they come up with another plan.
Let me guess, it's not going to be good.
They kidnap women.
Kidnap?
During a festival at Shiloh.
No way!
They tell the Benjaminites to hide in the vineyards.
Yeah.
Snatch any women who wander off alone.
You're kidding, right? They're condoning kidnapping and forced marriage.
Pretty much, yeah.
This is messed up. Seriously messed up.
It's not a happy ending, that's for sure.
It's awful. And the way the book ends, it describes everyone just going back home, happy.
Content, like nothing happened.
But underneath, it's all this violence and moral compromise.
They're trying to sweep it all under the rug.
This whole story, it just shows how dangerous unchecked power is.
It is.
And how easy it is to slip down that slope of moral compromise.
One bad decision leads to another, and then another.
You start with something horrible, then justify revenge, and the next thing you know, you're the bad guy.
That's the chilling reality Judges confronts us with.
I know. It's tough to hear, but it's important.
Absolutely. It forces us to look in the mirror. Are we any different?
Do we recognize those same patterns? In our own lives, our own society?
Big questions.
Yeah. Heavy stuff. This deep dive has given me a lot to think about, but there's still one piece missing.
What's that?
The whole leadership thing.
Oh, yes.
The book keeps saying the Israelites fell apart because they didn't have strong, godly leaders.
Right.
So how does the story connect to that?
That's a great point. And it's the key to understanding not just the Benjaminite outrage, but all of Judges. Let's dig into that a bit more.
You were saying the key to all this is leadership, or, well, the lack of it.
It really is.
What does that even look like in this story? I mean, everyone messed up.
Right.
The Levite, the elders, everyone.
And that's exactly the point Judges making.
You know, like that line, in those days there was no king in Israel.
And everyone did what was right in his own eyes.
Exactly. The Benjaminite outrage, it's not just one event.
It's like generations of moral decline.
And failed leadership.
Exactly.
So it's not enough to just have a king, any king.
Right.
It has to be the right kind of leader. Someone who can, like, guide them.
Lead them towards justice, righteousness.
Okay, yeah. So what does good leadership look like then? What were they missing?
Well, think back to the beginning. We talked about the covenant.
That agreement between God and the Israelites.
Right. Good leadership. In Judges, it's all about upholding that covenant.
Leading with justice. Compassion, obedience to God's law.
Putting the needs of the people first.
Which is not what we see here at all.
Nope.
Everyone's just looking out for themselves.
Revenge, lust, fear.
No one's saying, hey, wait, this is wrong. We got to stop.
And that's the tragedy. They had the law, the prophets, the example of their ancestors.
The ones who followed God faithfully.
Yeah, but they chose to ignore it all.
They turned inward, just focused on what they wanted.
It's like they forgot who they were.
Why God chose them.
They were supposed to be different.
A light to the nations.
A people set apart.
Because of their righteousness.
Their justice.
Instead, they become just like the Canaanites.
The ones they were supposed to drive out.
It's a tough message.
Judges doesn't sugarcoat it. It's a warning.
About what?
About how seductive self-indulgence is. How corrosive power can be.
And how even the most devout people
can fall.
If they don't have good leaders.
Strong, godly leaders. This whole deep dive, it's been heavy. Anger, sadness, you know.
Disbelief. But I think there's hope in there, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Even when things seem hopeless.
There's always a chance for redemption. To learn from our mistakes. Choose a better path.
Judges doesn't have a happy ending, really.
No, it doesn't.
But it does make you long for something better.
For a leader who can, you know, embody those covenant values.
Guide them back.
To their true purpose.
Yeah.
And that hope is what keeps us going.
So as we wrap up, what's the message for us today? How does this apply to our world?
I think the question is, what kind of leaders are we following? The ones who stand for justice, compassion, integrity.
Or the ones who just keep things the same. The violence, the division.
Because we're all responsible, right? For shaping the future. Mm-hmm. Choosing to be part of the solution. Not the problem.
It's a call to action, isn't it? To be more careful about who we follow, to hold them accountable, to live those values ourselves.
Absolutely. The story of the Benjaminite outrage, it's not just ancient history. It's a reflection of us.
The human condition, right? The struggle between good and evil.
Exactly. Keep exploring. Keep asking questions. Keep digging deeper. Understanding these ancient texts, it's a lifelong journey.
And it helps us make sense of our own world.
Exactly.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. And remember, the search for wisdom, it never ends.